This is photographer and Plotograph Pro creator, Troy Plota. You're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Enjoy!
This episode is sponsored by our friends at FreshBooks. The weather is better, and if you're a freelance photographer or a small business owner, you'd much rather be out in it shooting rather than dealing with paperwork, right? And that's where the cloud-based accounting software from FreshBooks comes in. To sign up for your 30-day free trial, go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you, FreshBooks, for your support. Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 94. 1 billion reasons not to use someone else's photos. In this episode, a noted photographer sues Getty for $1 billion. Another Canon 5D Mark IV rumor. Plotograph Pro breathes new life into your photos. Rumors that Sony will update the A99. IM capitalizes on Flickr's uncertainty. And there's a cool new monolite on the horizon. All that and more in episode 94 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Troy, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it, brother. You know, as I've said here before on the show, I love it when a photographer, you know, one of us, solves a problem or creates something that inspires, wows, and helps our brothers and sisters take things to a new level. And that's what Troy Plota has done with the photo animation software he created called Plotograph Pro, which I'll be talking about later in this episode. The photographer, director, and lover of technology has shot fashion, advertising, celebrities, and so much more. And his work has been seen as giant ads in Times Square, the Vegas Strip, and around the world. He's given TEDx talks, has been on Germany's Next Top Model TV show with Heidi Klum, the Pentagon and Disney have been interested in his technology, and he's helping to transform the industry that we love. I encourage you all to check out his work over on his website at troyplota.com. That's TROYPLOTA.com. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 94 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you all for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. And as always, we appreciate you hitting that subscribe button, making sure you get every episode, as well as telling your friends on social media and elsewhere, and helping to get the word out about this show. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Using someone else's images, not cool. Using the images of someone who makes their living that way, that's even worse. Now, using the images of someone who kindly released them into the public domain, then charging for their use? Well, that's beyond words in my opinion. This past week, it was revealed that noted photographer Carol M. Highsmith is suing Getty Images for, get this, $1 billion. Now, if you didn't know the details, you would think that Dr. Evil was behind this, and the $1 billion was an insane amount. But when you learn the particulars about this suit, suddenly, that price doesn't seem too crazy. Now, I apologize in advance for the number of quote, end quotes in this, but accuracy is really important here. So, Highsmith is suing Getty over what she calls a quote, gross misuse, end quote, of 18,775 photographs of hers, which document America. Photographs she donated to the Library of Congress. Photographs that she didn't intend others to charge for, of course. These photos are unfortunately listed alongside others in the public domain with, quote, no known restrictions on publication, end quote. Well, Getty has responded, and they're not going down without a fight. But it looks like Getty has not only been distributing these photos, a company called License Compliance Services, LCS, was on Getty's behalf pursuing what the suit characterizes as unauthorized use of Highsmith's photos. How did she find out about this, you might ask? Well, the company came after her for using one of her very own images on her website. Yep, Houston, we have a problem here. Now, realizing that this is a sticky situation they found themselves in, Getty has issued a statement saying the complaint is, quote, based on a series of misconceptions, end quote, and they wish to deal directly with Highsmith on this. But they add that if that's not possible, they will, quote, defend ourselves vigorously. End quote. That's lawyer speak, of course, where we're going to spend a whole lot of money to make sure we don't pay you anything close to $1 billion. Now, of this suit, Getty says, quote, "It is standard practice for image libraries to distribute and provide access to public domain content," end quote. And you know what? That might be fine and good, but when someone puts thousands of photos in the public domain and you charge for them, that just kind of breaks the whole spirit of the thing, don't you think? Maybe a company like Getty shouldn't be selling things that are out there in the public domain and meant to be free. That's an idea. Now the suit says, quote, "Getty are not only unlawfully charging licensing fees, but are falsely and fraudulently holding themselves out as the exclusive copyright owner," end quote. Okay, if true, that is not cool. As for LCS, the statement says, quote, "LCS works on behalf of content creators and distributors to protect them against the unauthorized use of their work. In this instance, LCS pursued an infringement on behalf of its customer, Alami. However, as soon as the plaintiff contacted LCS, LCS acted swiftly to cease its pursuit with respect to the image provided by Alami and notified Alami it would not pursue this content," end quote. I don't know how Alami figures into the picture here, but whatever. This is a total mess, you know, seriously. Either way, it is going to cost Getty a lot of money. And if they litigate this, the outcome of this case is going to be studied for a long time to come. It's that important. Hey, it's not every day you get sued for $1 billion, you know? If there's new developments in this matter, we'll let you guys know here on the podcast, of course. Next. Technology, I tell ya. You know, it is amazing. We live in exciting times as photographers, let alone human beings. Just look at the technology that maps your face in Snapchat and allows you or your teens to do things that wasn't even possible for consumers just like a year and a half ago. As for photos, we've seen moving images called cinemagraphs for a while now, thanks to companies like Flixel. But now things have gone to a whole new level with a tool called Plotograph Pro. With this software, you're able to take any image and animate it into a looping GIF or a video file, creating something that'll just blow people's minds. All that from just one JPEG. You're not shooting video or capturing multiple frames like in the past and making something that's moving, just one file. And within that file, you choose what it is that you want animated. That is crazy talk, and you're just going to have to see them to totally understand just how awesome these things are. Of everything that you shoot, there's got to be select images that could be made even more awesome with motion, right? Once you see what this software can do, I think there's going to be a number of images that you've shot that you're going to be like, you know what? I can totally see that in motion, no doubt. So photographer and artist Troy Plota created this way of making these really cool cinemagraphs, and on the website for Plotograph Pro, it says, quote, "Cinemagraphs originate from video footage and require specific video production, which adds considerably to the costs. This also greatly limits the amount of available footage. Plotographs are free from the constraints of video, which makes billions of images available to bring to life at a fraction of the price of any other process," end quote. As I said, you can take any single JPEG, animate it, and from there you can export it as a GIF or GIF, if you want to call it that, an MP4 or MOV file, thanks to their patent-pending combination of specialized imaging algorithms. Our friend Trey Ratcliffe has been using it for a while now, and if you hit the show notes for episode 94, you can not only check out this sweet product, you can see a video of Trey using the software on a number of beautiful images from Burning Man and other places that he shot, and it is just crazy town, let me tell you. Of course, Trey is a master of photography, so you're going to expect that you're going to get some really good stuff out of this, right? Of course. The software looks really straightforward, and I understand it's incredibly easy to make these things, and I can't wait to give it a try myself. According to Digital Trends, Plotograph Pro has been used already in ads for Chevrolet, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and Airbnb, just to name a few. When you see this software, it's easy to understand why companies would want something transformative like this to help get our attention. You know, signal through the noise, as they say. There are so many billions of still images out there, and we kind of pass over them now, don't we? What really gets our attention, and what studies have shown, is that things that are moving whether they're a boomerang clip on Instagram, something that just goes back and forth over and over again, or a short video clip, or an animated GIF, or GIF, or whatever, gets a lot more views and grabs our attention. So software like this can really take things to a new level for so many photographers. It's available as a pre-release beta to a limited number of people before it's available to the rest of the planet's inhabitants. But you can sign up right now for $300 US, and that's their pre-launch price. It's going to be about $350, as I understand. That'll get you 1 year of access plus 10 gigabytes of online storage. And at that price point, the software is not going to be for everyone, of course, but that's okay. And hey, if you shoot weddings, this is certainly something that you could bill for, or you could even throw in as value added, something that they're not expecting. Imagine creating something that's animated with a flowing wedding dress or whatever that brides can post on their Facebook, their Instagram, etc. You know, when they do that and their friends and family see that, tell me that's not going to drive business your way like crazy. I mean, seriously, think about all the wedding photos that you've seen. You hardly ever see wedding video, right? So imagine something that's kind of in between, a photo that you can create with software like Plotograph Pro that's animated. Everyone's going to love that. Or maybe you shoot senior photos. So now you have a tool to bring those photos of those seniors to life and do something that no one else out there in the marketplace is doing. You could be like my friend Justin Roskowski in the St. Louis area who shoots weddings and all that, and offer something that even in a larger market like that, most people aren't doing. And certainly in a smaller market, if you're in small town America and you're competing against four or five other photographers, and you've got the ability to animate photos and no one else is doing that, you're going to get a lot more business, I think. I mean, it just makes sense. You're offering something that no one else has. And even if you give it as a value-added free thing, someone's going to choose you over the, you know, other person, right? They already view us photographers as a dime a dozen. So why not offer them something else for that dime? I mean, either you're getting that dime or someone else is. Think about it. I don't shoot weddings or any of that stuff, but if I did, this would be a no-brainer. $300 would be well worth it. You would get that back in spades. Not even a question. I can see so many sweet uses of this program. No doubt about it. Think about what kind of photography that you shoot. Can it be animated? Would it look better with parts of it that were animated? You know, I had to rewrite part of this story because after it was all done, I decided to reach out to Troy Plota about doing an intro. I was thinking we'd use it in a future episode. I didn't think he'd get back to me so quickly, but he did. So I decided to go ahead and use it in this episode since I'm talking about his software. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, Troy kindly gave me access to Plotograph Pro so I could have a better understanding of how it works and what I could do with it. And if you follow me on social media, I'm LensShark, by the way, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You're going to start seeing what I come up with as I explore this software. I'm really excited about it. There's not a whole lot of software that I'm like, yeah, I've got to use that. But when I saw this, I was like, oh, I can see so many uses for this darn thing. Just thinking about it, I've got maybe a dozen or more of my images in my head that would be perfect to animate. So definitely follow me over there and let me know what you guys think. Next. Canon's 5D Mark IV, as we know, is coming and coming soon. Everyone knows that. That's not even up for debate anymore. But what maybe, though, is what exactly will be in it once it actually drops. And the latest rumor coming from the good folks over at Canon Rumors is that the camera will feature a 30 megapixel image sensor, not the 24 that we've heard before. For reference, the 5D Mark III, a great, wonderful camera, was released over 4 years ago now and is 22.3 megapixels. You know, it's hard to believe it's been over 4 years. And also, 22.3 megapixels, that was a lot for 4 years ago. I remember that when it came out, people were complaining about having to get bigger hard drives, larger media cards, etc. That's something I think that we always talk about when these larger megapixel cameras come out. Now, in theory, if they kept it at 22 or even 24 megapixels, let's say, that would likely mean better light gathering power, but not much, if any, increase in resolution, of course, also known as megapixels. But 30 megapixels, however, would be a nice increase in resolution, and while it would no doubt be better in low light, it wouldn't be nearly as much as if it stayed at 22.3. In theory, there's a lot of math going on here, and you know how we photographers are with math. When I was a photojournalist and shooting the Nikon D700, its 12.1 megapixels were plenty, let me tell you. Myself and many others hoped that an update to the camera, which never came by the way, would keep the megapixels at 12.1, maybe 16 tops, and give us better performance in horrible lighting. When you're a photojournalist, that is extremely helpful. If you're a portrait photographer, you can use increased resolution, of course. If you're shooting night football games and other things where lighting is an afterthought and largely out of your control, you want higher ISOs. So 30 megapixels on the 5D Mark III, knowing who this body is targeted at, makes sense. It just does. Keeping it at 22.3 megapixels would cause people to complain, so you definitely have to bump that up. 24 isn't enough to impress anybody. I mean, remember, it's been 4 years now, so at very least, you got to be at 30 or higher. But you can't go too high because then you're causing people to have to buy new sets of media cards yet again, bigger hard drives, blah, blah, blah. And Canon doesn't even make hard drives and media cards, so there's no reason to push the megapixels and file sizes for that reason. So what I think you do is you bump the megapixels up a bit to 30. I mean, that's a nice increase. That's almost 8 megapixels. You give them higher, cleaner ISOs, so when they're shooting weddings and the reception afterward, they can get the job done better. And since it's been over 4 years now, you've got a body that's worthy of an upgrade. An expenditure that a photographer, especially one who's using your cameras for a living, could justify. So this all makes sense, I think. You know, the 1DX Mark II, Canon's flagship body, is way more expensive than the 5D Mark IV level model, but it's only 20.2 megapixels. But you have to remember that that camera is designed mostly for photojournalists and sports shooters who'd rather have better ISO in low lighting conditions rather than more resolution. So if you think about it, a 30 megapixel 5D Mark IV would be acceptable. It's a completely different mindset camera, much like the 5DS and 5DSR, which are both 50 megapixel bodies, are. If the 5D Mark IV drops with 30 megapixels, I wouldn't be surprised at all. Just as I won't be surprised that it can shoot 4K video, which it will. Next. As we always say here on the podcast, thanks to the amazing technology available to us, sharing our photos is so easy. And so is running your business if you use FreshBooks. Whether you make your money with photography or you have another small business, you'd rather be shooting and editing your photos than dealing with paperwork, right? I know I would. Well, FreshBooks solves this problem by making it incredibly fast and easy. Their amazingly simple cloud-based invoicing solution keeps your cash flow details all in one place so you know exactly who you've invoiced, who's paid, who hasn't, and what your income is. And their FreshBooks mobile app is awesome. It lets you take pics of your receipt and organize them later so you have them all ready to go come tax time. Do yourself a favor and check out FreshBooks. You'll be more prepared, less stressed, and you can get back to enjoying your life and doing what you love most. Amazingly, on average, FreshBooks users get paid a full 2 weeks faster when accepting online payments. They cut 2 days a month of administrative tasks, and they double the revenue in the first 24 months. More time shooting means more time to make money rather than shuffling papers. And right now, FreshBooks is offering a free 30-day trial to our listeners. Just go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Thank you so much, FreshBooks. As you've heard me say here before, I believe Sony's older A-mount system has achieved zombie status. It is the undead. It's kind of dead, but somehow still kicking. Who knows why? You know, I don't think anyone can say with a straight face that Sony is excited about the A-mount system. Again, do any of the Sony artisans of imagery post anything online about A-mount? No, they don't. We've seen what? One new body in the past year or 18 months or so, and a very consumer-oriented body at that. Now, contrast that with Sony's E-mount line, which saw a number of bodies updated and a slew of new lenses this year. And that's not to mention third-party lens makers, which release E-mount lenses but shun the A-mount. Did they get any special info that the rest of us don't have? No, they don't. They look at the market, they read the tea leaves, and see that Sony isn't pushing A-mount like they once did, so they don't bother making A-mount lenses anymore. So, hearing a rumor that Sony plans to update their awesome A99 body is kind of odd to me. Sure, it's possible, but I think it's unlikely to happen. I don't know. Maybe it is. Who knows? I could see them updating that body and one or two others, because if you think about it, there's still a lot of people out there with A-mount glass that are looking to upgrade to a nicer body, but they don't want to sell off their A-mount glass just to move over to the E-mount system. If they were going to switch, they surely would have done it by now, right? I mean, what are they waiting for? It's nearly August 2016 as I record this, and the E-mount system has been going strong from Sony for like, what, 2+ years now? If they were going to switch, it surely would have happened already. Now, the leaked specs for the A99, according to Sony Alpha Rumors, is a 42-megapixel sensor, 499 AF points, dual in-body image stabilization, such as the one in the A7R Mark II, 4K video, an improved flash system and battery, and it'll be available, supposedly, in a kit with a 24 to 105mm f4 lens. You know, specs-wise, that's not at all crazy. It seems plausible, and I guess time's going to tell if we're going to see this or not. One thing I do know is that if we don't see an A-mount body sometime by the end of 2016, I think it's really hard to make the case that Sony cares about the A-mount system. Its heart is clearly in E-mount. I mean, that's what they're excited about. That's what they all push. You never hear any talk about A-mount stuff. As I've said for at least a year now, it's my personal belief that Sony sees the A-mount system as being transitional. In other words, since the E-mount glass lineup isn't fully fleshed out yet and won't be for a number of years, Sony has all that A-mount glass available to use with an adapter, of course. I don't think that Sony is ever going to announce the end of the A-mount line. I think they'll just let it fade away as E-mount continues to dominate, and that's okay. But in the meantime, I think they're going to throw a bone here and there to the A-mount users by giving them an update to this body or that body, even if you're not interested in upgrading to the A99 Mark III or whatever it would be. At least it gives you hope that there's going to be something coming. You've got all these A-mount system users out there that love their gear, and it's great gear, but without new stuff coming, how does that make you feel? I wouldn't feel very good about it. If you're in the Sony A-mount system right now, are you happy with the few and far between developments? I have yet to meet someone who is. So I think it's pretty clear what's going on here. A-mount is a zombie, and that zombie's days are numbered. Next. As you may have heard, the once mighty Yahoo is being parted out, and Verizon is picking up a number of Yahoo's core properties, including Flickr. But what is that going to mean for Flickr's users? At this point, no one really knows. Photography community and marketplace IM is on the case, and within 48 hours of the announcement, the company has made it incredibly easy to put Flickr in the rearview mirror and move everything that you have over there on over to IM. They've opened their web uploader to everyone now, so you can move your entire Flickr collection, or Dropbox, Google Drive, and Picasa for that matter, over to IM very easily. As if that wasn't helpful enough though, IM's vision technology will analyze your photos and tag them, make suggestions, and help you make those photos as visible as possible to the rest of the community. From that point, you can accept the tags individually or add them all at once, and that's going to be a huge time saver and very much appreciated. IM's web uploader was introduced back in 2015, also known as last year, but until now was only exclusively available to IM's market users. So if you didn't sell your photo through the service, you weren't able to use the uploader. But now it's available to everyone. They very smartly decided to let the masses use this now that Verizon is snapping up Flickr. And as a result, I think the IM service is going to grow like crazy. IM told the Petapixel mothership, quote, "With more than 18 million photographers, IM has an active, vibrant community sharing not just incredible photos, but also an appreciation for the art of taking them. If you are coming from another service, we think you'll be surprised by the interaction and positive spirit of our community," end quote. And yes, if you want to import those photos into IM and make them available for sale, you can do that, of course, too. And what's really awesome is that can be dealt with from within the uploader. If you want to copy your photos over from Flickr, where, of course, they're going to remain unless, you know, Flickr goes away, so it's like having another free copy online, and bring those into IM, head on over to their website at eyeem.com/upload to start the process. If you already have an IAM account and you're logged in, you're instantly going to see the uploader. If not, though, you can easily sign in with Facebook or by filling out a rather short form. Now, I don't think that Verizon is just going to turn off Flickr and upset millions of people, many of whom are Verizon customers, by the way, but I don't at all think it would be a bad idea to hedge your bets by importing your Flickr images over to IAM just in case. Can you hear me now? Sorry, old Verizon joke. Next. If you do a lot of off-camera flash photography, like our friend Francisco Joel Hernandez, you have many options available to you. From the crazy expensive and awesome pro photo units on down to budget strobes from Flashpoint. Well, there's a lot of stuff in the middle too, and one of them is the new battery-powered 500 watt second Priolite Ultra Strobe, a strobe that can turn day into night by syncing as fast as 1/8,000th of a second. With Priolite's new Ultra Monolight, you get speed, portability, and power all in one package, and they believe that they will, quote, blow your mind, end quote. We'll see if that actually happens, of course, but the company, which has been around for 6 years now, named this product Ultra because it's ultra portable, ultra powerful, ultra versatile, and ultra compact. Those are their words. They love the word ultra, you can tell. Of this new product, they say it's, quote, the smallest metal frame, metal hardware, metal mount, lithium ion powered 500 watt second strobe with built-in 2.4 gigahertz wireless, 220 full power flashes per charge, and the ability to sync to most Canon, Nikon, Pentax, and Sony cameras at up to 1/8,000th shutter speed and at any power setting, end quote. What's really cool is that their hot sync technology that they introduced back in 2012 can not only sync that high with those cameras, if you shoot with the Pentax 645Z, you can sync up to 1/4,000th of a second without sacrificing any power. That's pretty sweet considering that camera can usually only sync up to 1/125th of a second. So you got medium format and the ability to turn day into night, and that is awesome. The system uses the company's Prio Remote HS, a hot shoe mounted 2.4 gigahertz wireless remote control that lets your camera talk to the strobes and vice versa. It enables hot sync from right there at your camera's position so you can adjust your strobe settings without having to head over to the lights and try to feel up there from however high they are and adjust them. You know, a lot of times you have modifiers on them and you just can't exactly get on in there and make the adjustments so easily. So being able to do that from right at your camera's position is huge. And according to the company, you can do this from up to 1,000 feet away. That's roughly 305 meters. Now, of course, if you're shooting from that far away, you're likely using an incredibly long, incredibly expensive lens. And in that case, you're either using pro photos and wouldn't even consider these strobes, or you've spent so much money on those long lenses that these are about all you can afford after that. Now, you've got some time to figure this all out because thankfully, Priolite has a Kickstarter campaign to help fund this product. As this episode is released on Sunday, July 31st, 2016, there's still 3 days left to go in the campaign, and they've raised over $75,000 US of their $28,000 goal. So it's already fully funded. You can get one of these units for $800 US with their super early bird deal, or $1,130 as an early bird. Once these early bird deals, though, are gone, the Priolite Ultra will cost you $1,300, and it's scheduled to ship sometime in September of 2016. And yes, if you've listened to this show for a while, you know what I'm going to say next, right? Right? Yep. Kickstarter is not a store. So keep that in mind. You could lose every dollar that you've pledged and not even receive the product. And that goes for anything on Kickstarter, of course. These lights look really cool, but of course there are many options out there, and this is just one of them. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 94 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, feel free to email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook where I'm Lensshark. That's L-E-N-S-S-H-A-R-K. Now, if you'd like to help support this show, don't forget that FreshBooks has an incredible 30-day free trial for you. Their software is amazing, and you can go to freshbooks.com/petapixel and enter petapixel in the How Did You Hear About Us section for that. And as I mentioned a couple of episodes ago, and this is not an ad, this is just a straight-up awesome deal for our audience. If you want to get $100 off the upcoming Out of New York conference, I think it's in October of this year, head on over to outofnewyork.com and enter Sharky in the discount code section. That's Sharky. It's a great conference. Everyone loves it. And I negotiated $100 off for you guys. So definitely check that out. If you're in the area or you can travel over there, you're going to love that. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 95. Well, it's F8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.
So if you follow me on Focial. That's a new one. I seriously need to record in the evening because on a Saturday afternoon, everyone wants to mow their lawn. Frustrations. If I had a seafood shop, it would be called Frustrations and Crustaceans. See, these are the weird things that go through my mind as I'm waiting for people to stop mowing. Why can't everyone around me have small yards? It would be like 5 minutes tops and they'd be done. Nope.